Welcome, welcome. It is Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you for the next hour on the Big Red Bench. We'll bring you a full roundup of the day's sporting action, as well as a chat between Rory and Cork boxers Spike O'Sullivan and Cathal Crowley. I've also got a great interview coming up for you with Extreme E Racing driver Clara Anderson and a Six Nations debrief with Moss Finn. So let's get into it, shall we? We are starting off with Gaelic Games, where the Cork hurlers took a very dominant win against Offaly this afternoon. The full-time score from Glenisk O'Connor Park was Cork 5-28 to Offaly 16 points. And off the balls, Aisling O'Reilly has your full-time report.
It's full time here at Glenisk O'Connor Park. It finished Cork 5-28, Offaly 16 points. It was a comfortable victory for Cork. They led by 10 points at the break. Two goals in that first half coming from Alan Connolly. The Rebels started the second half the strongest with the two opening scores, but Offaly fought back with two of their own. David Nally knocking over an impressive long range shot on the 43rd minute. Dara Fitzgibbon, Declan Dawson and Brian Roach all got in the act to stretch Cork's lead further. And on the 53rd minute, Alan Connolly got his hat-trick with another well-improvised shot at goal. Things went from bad to worse for Offaly as Cork got two more goals from Brian Hayes and Dara Fitzgibbon. It's very much been a one-sided affair, Cork proving too strong for the faithful county. It finished Cork 5-28, Offaly 16 points.
And we'll have post-match reactions for you later on in the show as well, so stay tuned for that. There were four games down for decision in the Premier League today. It finished 4-0 in favour of Tottenham Hotspur in their game against Aston Villa, and Tom Ross was at Villa Park.
Aston Villa 0, Tottenham Hotspur 4. Tottenham cruised to a vital win in their chase for a Champions League place. Goals from Maddison, Johnson, Son and Werner leave them in the driving seat, 2 points ahead of Villa with a game in hand. Villa have it all to do, especially as they will be without their influential skipper John McGinn for 3 games after he received a red card.
Elsewhere, Brighton secured a 1-0 win against Nottingham Forest. Alan Lewis was at the Amex.
After 3 defeats in a row going into this game, Roberto De Zerbi said this was the most important win of his Brighton career so far. His team were made to work hard for 3 points against the Nottingham Forest side fighting for their Premier League lives. Forest boss Nuno Espirito Santo absolutely furious that Jacob Moda was still on the pitch after his second half challenge on Nico Williams. I'm sure we'll hear more about that as the week goes on. A big 3 points for a Brighton side still in with a chance of European places, and a blow to Forest in their battle against the drop. Brighton 1, Nottingham Forest 0.
In the other 2 p.m. kickoff, West Ham ground out a 2-2 draw with Burnley, and Guy Swindles was at the London Stadium.
West Ham 2, Burnley 2. It's taken West Ham a while, but they are finally level. Time added on when Mo Kudos down the left-hand side finally beat Asignon, with whom he'd had a battle all day, and managed to cross it into Danny Ings, the substitute, who controlled it brilliantly and turned and fired in. Up until then, it all excellent chance. Chance for Burnley goes wide. Earlier, Ings, just minutes after coming on as a substitute, had a goal disallowed for a fractional offside. It's West Ham 2, Burnley 2.
The final game of the day saw Liverpool and Manchester City clash in what could still be a potential decider for the winner of this year's Premier League trophy. After nearly 100 minutes of play, it ended 1-1 between the top teams. Shane Pennington was at Anfield.
Liverpool 1, Manchester City 1. A pulsating game here then ends all square to leave Arsenal in pole position in the title race, much to the frustration of Jurgen Klopp's side, who really should have won it but missed some glorious chances in that second half. City took a deserved lead when John Stones swept home a Kevin De Bruyne corner, but Liverpool equalised through Alexis McAllister's penalty after Edison had brought down Nunes. And after that, the hosts dominated. Luis Diaz twice and Darwin Nunes missed great chances to win it, while Jeremy Doku hit the post for City late on. It's finished Liverpool 1, Manchester City 1.
To rugby now, and in the Six Nations, France have secured a vital bonus point win against Wales at the Millennium Stadium. The game finished 45 points to 24 in France's favour, and the French have come into the game with just one win so far in the campaign, while Wales have now lost all four of their games and are facing the wooden spoon. Finally, to basketball, where in the misquote.ie Super League, the Address UCC Glanmire have beaten Portlaoise Panthers by 85 points to 69. Now, we're going to start off with a debrief after Ireland's loss against England in the Six Nations yesterday. It was their first loss in this year's campaign, and it was certainly a very tough watch for all Irish fans. And just before the show, I had a chance to discuss the result with Moss Finn. Moss, it is great to have you back on the Big Red Bench again. How are you feeling about Ireland's performance against England yesterday, now that you've had a bit of time to reflect on it?
Yeah, well, obviously the overall feeling of disappointment would be the big thing. Mm. But on reflection, I would possibly suggest that maybe the better team won on the day, but we possibly could have won it. But overall, I would say that England probably deserved it on the day. And I say the overriding theme was that perhaps they seemed to play as if they wanted it that little bit more. That would be my sort of synopsis at this stage after 24 hours.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to sum it up. It reminded me of when the Northern Hemisphere teams first started getting wins against the All Blacks, in the sense that the only way to defeat them back then was to kind of get on top of them from minute one and prevent them from getting their game plan going. How impressed were you by the level of effort, as you say, just the drive that England put into shutting us down yesterday?
Yeah, they came like they were on a mission, and rugby football is all about motivation. And if you don't get it up as much as the opposition, you'll get beaten 9 times out of 10. And England, as I said, wanted it more. They were revved up for it. Everyone had said Ireland were 92 favourites. Everyone said Ireland were going to win and win by at least 10 points, whatever. But at least England were listening to that all day. But England are different, and particularly in Twickenham. On the law of averages, if we should have beaten them, perhaps would have been every pundit in the country would have said we would beat them. But England at home are a different animal, you know, and people forget as well also that they got to the World Cup semi-final and they were beaten by a controversial penalty by South Africa. Another 15 seconds and they're in the World Cup final, and who knows what could have happened then, because finals are finals. So I myself, even on the Big Red Bench last weekend, I didn't take it for granted that we were going to beat England, because England, no matter how bad they are as a team, they're always physically very, very strong. They have big units always in the pack, and if you're in an arm wrestle with them, they'll win it 9 times out of 10, and that's exactly what happened. They slightly beat us up. They deprived us of possession. They deprived us at the breakdown, and overall, they put us on the back foot, and it's very hard to play rugby football off the back foot.
Absolutely. You mentioned the breakdown. How did you... I'm trying to be politically correct here asking this question, but what did you make of how the breakdown was refereed? Because there were some questionable moments. You know, Ellis Genge's clear out on Tadhg Furlong kind of comes to mind, and we saw Andy Farrell getting uncharacteristically agitated with Steve Borthwick at halftime. Do you think that was related to what he was seeing at the breakdown?
Possibly, but I mean, Genge, like, is a nasty bit of work, and he's mouthy, you know. He was always shouting against us there, even when we were favourites for matches and favourites for World Cup. Genge always gave his opinion, you know. He's a guy who doesn't need to be asked for an opinion. He'd give it anyway. And he's a nasty bit of work, and I thought he was probably wrong there. Because Furlong is a tough man, you know, but I'm not too sure what happened at half-time, but I'd say it was possibly an Irish-English thing, but, you know, Farrell being an Irish man and Steve Borthwick being Indigenous England, like, and the more, you know, he's the mouthpiece of English rugby for the last few years, and he's quite a stoic character. I was quite amazed to see him get animated at halftime, and also for Andy Farrell, but he's also quite a stoic character. He's a very reserved man who's very careful with his tongue, and I didn't like that, but I think it possibly showed how much England were up for it. Like, but on reflection, that fella Genge is a nasty bit of work, and he's had a few yellow cards in his time, possible reds, you know. So I think, you know, but generally England seem to have that little bit of more devil than we had, you know, but that's the way rugby goes, and you can't when you start off on the wrong foot, you know, they got to, it's very hard to get it up then and get back at it, you know. Now, having said that, we did very well, like, but England seemed to be on more of a mission than we were.
For sure. And possibly the most hotly debated moment from the game would be that box kick from Conor Murray right at the end. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think it was the right decision?
Well, Conor Murray, like, is, you know, far be it for me to criticise Conor Murray given what he's done. I mean, he's after three Lions tours and well in excess of 100 caps, but most uncharacteristic of him, you know, because he's kind of Ronan O'Gara-esque in his sort of execution of things, particularly near the death of a match where O'Gara could put a match away and keep you pegged down in their line, all that kind of stuff. And I can't understand why he kicked the ball away with sort of 1:30 on the clock, because we were giving possession away, and possession is 9/10 of the law in rugby. Particularly, all day we were finding it very hard to get the ball back from England. So I don't understand why he did it. It was most uncharacteristic. I can't understand why he didn't possibly pass to Crowley, might give to Aki, and we'd maul it and run the clock down just for a minute more. But he did what he did, but to my mind, it was an error that cost the match really in the end.
Yeah. Let's move on and talk about that huge win for Italy against Scotland. It wasn't the prettiest game of rugby, but I think it was, to be fair, fantastic to see the Italian team get a win in front of a sold-out crowd in Rome, especially at home.
I couldn't agree more. They were very, very unlucky against France the previous time with the ball falling off the kicking tee and the referee making a wrong decision about that as well, by the way. But the Italians, last year they were a basket case. This year they're competing big time in matches, and there's one thing to compete, but to get over the line made a huge difference, and it's very, very important that they beat them, that they won. Like, there's no point in being a gallant loser anymore. That day has gone for Italy, and for the sake of the Six Nations and all that, it is paramount that they contend, you know. And like, it was a fantastic match. I mean, the two matches yesterday were fantastic matches. I forgot to say that they were two great test matches, which, you know, sometimes rugby can be very boring, pick bang, the usual sort of rubbish. But they were two great matches, and the Italians bring a kind of a flair to it, which they've always had, but now they're a little bit cuter in the execution of that, and they're better defensively. So I felt they deserved it. Scotland are a team kind of tailor-made for them, in that Scotland tried to throw it around, sometimes off the back foot, which isn't always intelligent. But there were some great passages of play and great interpassing, and I thought it was refreshing to watch it. The whole day yesterday was a great day for rugby union.
Definitely, and I think, as you said, people can't call that win a sort of flash in the pan, which they may have done before, because, as you said, they pushed England very close and they drew with France. So, fingers crossed, it's positive signals for the future to come for them. A quick word on
without a doubt, because, you know, prior to this season, there was talk of maybe bringing George or Portugal into the Six Nations, whether we get another team, because Italy had failed. But like, we also saw their under-20 team there a couple of weeks ago in Musgrave Park, should possibly have won, you know. So they obviously have a structure, and, you know, things are looking bright for them and bright for the future of the Six Nations.
And a quick word on Scotland. They kind of continue to struggle with putting a string of consistent performances together despite the kind of firepower they have in different areas. What do you think is the missing piece in that camp? Because it must be so frustrating for Gregor Townsend as a coach to see them yo-yoing out.
Yeah, I don't ever feel too sorry. I like Scotland. I don't ever feel too sorry when Gregor Townsend is in charge of him, because he's very anti-Irish and very sort of, how would I say, he's kind of cranky. You know, he's always picky on small things before matches and saying that Ireland did this wrong or whatever. But I do love the way Scotland try and play. They play the fast game, rocking game and all that. But at the end of the day, and they have Finn Russell, the best player in the world. Like, I mean, he's wonderful to watch. But at the end of the day, the bottom line with Scotland is they don't have the physical power up front. And I think that counts in the end. You can do all the flash hairy stuff you want, but it's very hard to be running the ball wide like they do all the time when they don't make the hard yards, because they don't have the physicality to make the hard yards like South Africa or New Zealand or even us at the moment, or even England at the moment. Like, they can't make the hard yards that you have to make if you're going to put the ball wide. They're putting the ball wide and they're getting tackled over the advantage line and they're in trouble. It was epitomised by their performance against South Africa in the World Cup. where they ran the ball from deep, and it was food and drink to the South Africans, who kept tackling them behind the advantage line and eventually won. So the Scotland ethic is lovely in terms of flair and running and all that, but at the end of the day, I think they lack the physical grunt in the front five to get over the advantage line and run the ball in the right areas of the field.
Mm. And the final game of the weekend, obviously, Wales versus France, that's underway just now as we're on the call.
Yeah.
And it's France who are slightly ahead at the moment, but it's actually been a very entertaining game so far, 4 tries.
Yeah.
What are your expectations for that game?
Well, France were poor, you know. I mean, I'd say France are in a kind of a hangover from the World Cup. They had built up so much to that. First of all, in actually getting it through politically getting it, which was a fair bit of ingenuity. They then failed to win the World Cup on their home turf. And I think the glue that was holding the whole thing together was Dupont at nine.
Yeah.
And he went off to the seven asides. And I think without Dupont, they're about half the team, you know. And Italy wouldn't have drawn with them if Dupont was playing.
No.
Likewise, I have no doubt that they'd beat Wales in Cardiff today if Dupont was playing. So I think they're half the team without them, and they also have a hangover from the World Cup, and they're less interested because they don't have that sort of carrot of looking forward to winning the World Cup on their home turf at the moment, and everything is a little bit deflationary there. That's my resume of them. Wales, on the other hand, have absolutely nothing. Their provinces are in turmoil. Their players are extremely young, and I think the only bit of glue that's holding them together is Gatland. So tell me who will win today between France and Wales. I'm not so sure, because it's six of one, half a dozen of the other, but, you know, once it's entertaining, you know, that'll be nice too.
Yeah, two teams with their own troubles. Well, look, hopefully we'll see Ireland bounce back in their final game against Scotland. Do you have any, obviously we're still a few days out from that yet, do you have any expectations for the kind of bounce back?
Well, you see, as I said, rugby football is all about motivation. And we have our back up for that now, and we come out deeply motivated, having been stung, and we react. I think physically we're stronger than Scotland up front. We beat them comprehensively in the World Cup, and we're sore after being beaten yesterday. We've won, virtually created a record for amount of matches in a row in the Six Nations. Yesterday would have been the 12th. I can't see us losing back to back.
Yeah.
So I go for an Ireland win big time.
Absolutely. Fingers crossed you're right. We'd love to see that one to finish it off. But look, Moss, thanks so much for joining me again on the Big Red Bench.
You're very welcome, Sarah.
Great stuff from Moss Finn there, talking about the weekend that was in the Six Nations. Let's see how Ireland get on against Scotland in that next game. We're going to talk boxing now, because it's going to be a massive week for Cork boxing, with 4 of the Leaside's finest in action. First up next Friday, March 15th, is Cove's Callum Walsh, who has 9 wins from his pro fights. He is in action at the theatre in Madison Square Garden. He's fighting Dwaran Yelousinov. And another undefeated Corkman, Tommy Hyde, is also in action in the States the same weekend. The Governor takes on Waterford's Craig McCarthy for the Celtic Nations title at the world-famous Cow Palace in San Francisco. And that bout takes place on Saturday, March 16th. And then closer to home, Cork's Mike O'Sullivan and Cathal Crowley are also making a return to the ring. Crowley is in action in Galway on Saturday night also, and then O'Sullivan is fighting the following night, March 17th, and that's in Mayo. So absolutely tons going on for Cork boxers in the next week. And Rory has been speaking to Cathal and to Spike ahead of their bouts.
All right, delighted to be joined now on the show by our two Cork boxers fighting in two separate cards over St. Patrick's weekend. Delighted to welcome Cathal Crowley back to the show. Cathal, how are you, sir?
My good now, Rory. How are you?
All good, sir. All good. Thanks for joining us. And our old friend Spike O'Sullivan joins us as well. Spike, how are you, buddy?
Hey, Rory, yourself?
All good, man. Thanks very much indeed for joining us. It's a big weekend for both of you. Cathal, I might ask you first. You obviously know Spike quite a long time. He was in your corner up in Prokeel Hall. Can you tell us how that kind of, how you first met, I suppose, and how Spike became involved in your camp?
Yeah, I started doing my strength and conditioning work with Dave O'Connell out in the Mardi. And Spike's been working with him for years. So we started training together, doing strength and conditioning first. And then eventually I just asked him, could I start coming up to the gym, up here to Pascal's gym? And that's how the relationship started.
And would you would obviously, like, being a Cork boxer, would have been a fan of Spike anyway?
Yeah, I knew him. Funny last week we found a picture 8 years ago of him giving me an award after I won in All-Ireland 8 years ago.
What did you see in Cathal Spike the first time you came across him, I suppose?
Hard worker, dedicated, strong, fit. Get all the clinches, make good fighter, and so watching him in the gym, I'm just being more impressed every week. Really, very dedicated fighter, just shows good commitment, and he's a quick learner as well, which is a very important attribute to have. I think that's vital for anyone to progress. They need to be able to learn quickly, and I think he's learning very quickly, and transitioned from amateur to professional really quickly, and. He's got a great future ahead.
It certainly does. How have you found then training with Spike, Kyle, and what have you learned from him?
Yeah, just the experience he brings from the fights in Broken Law, just having him in the corner. So he's had big nights over many years. Like, it's just a great experience. That there, you wouldn't get anyone better in Ireland, not a mindset of Cork. The experience he has is vital. Like, so it's, you could, no one else has it.
That experience, Carl, I suppose, of fighting in Cork in Parochial Hall, it's just, it was an incredible night and incredible atmosphere, and as I say, you got the win, so I mean, like, all that will stand to you.
Yeah, definitely, Joe. I did two fights in Parochial Hall, one in the summer and one in October, and there were two good fights for me. Learned a lot in the fights. One of them was my first decision win. So I'll learn a lot from that, and I'll take it on board and going forward.
Spike, it's been a while since, I suppose, you've been back in the ring. You must be kind of itching to get back in there.
Yeah, I'm excited. So, by the time I get in the ring, 2 weeks' time, it'll be 22 months since I've been in the ring. So I'm really looking forward to it.
And what was the, like, what was the hold up? I mean, like, why haven't you fought in 22 months? Was it just you didn't want it, or fights weren't happening? What was the hold up?
Yeah, so I had a pretty big fight, my last fight in New York in May 2022. And I lost that fight, just kind of took a bit of time off after that. With my intention to fight in 2023, I didn't fight. I broke my ankle playing football in the garden with my kids for a freak accident. So that kind of put me out for about 6 months, and then I started back training and just not materialised towards the end of the year in 2023. So I didn't find myself out of the ring until now.
Frustrating, I'd imagine, was it?
It was, yeah. It was. But look, it might add longevity to me as well. I guess there's a lot of healing going on, and revitalised me and refreshed my hunger to get back in the ring. And as I say, I'm very excited to get back in.
What happened when you broke your ankle? The young fella got too hard in the tackle in the backyard, and what happened?
Yeah, Tommy, he's a ringman player, a dirty player. He had 2 foot of challenge. it was actually the grass knows about existence as a hair of mine in your head. So there's no grass there. It was just like a bog. And I slipped, my foot kind of got suctioned into the mud. My foot stayed there, and I fell the other way. And I have a camera in my house, and I look back at the camera, and you can clearly hear the snap.
Oh, I don't even want to know that.
Proceeded by me screaming.
I get squeamish and all that stuff.
It was nasty.
I can only imagine it was. What's that process then like, Spike, I suppose? Like, physically, you've got to do all the work to get back fit and get back confident in the gym, but psychologically, it must take a bit of going to get over that hurdle of getting back into the ring, I suppose.
Well, I've been doing this since I'm 5, and actually I want to give a shout out to my neighbours there. When I broke my ankle, like, they were swiftly out with the painkillers and a sup of brandy, so fair play to them for that. Sat me to the back of the car till I was carted off the hospital. But when I came back to the gym, the lads said it felt as though I'd never been away. Boxing to me is nearly like learning to walk. I've been boxing all my life. I've boxed since 5 years of age. I'm nearly boxing 35 years now, come September. So, it comes back to me quite quickly, And Sparrow is a bit of a wooden awaken, all right. You just would be a bit rusty. Your reflexes wouldn't be as good as they were, I guess. And it takes a bit of, you know, getting used to it. Mm-hmm. But I'm getting there.
Good stuff, boy. Good stuff. Carl, talk to me about your fight next week. You're fighting in Galway on the 16th. I see there's going to be a big crowd from Cork going up for that fight as well, which is going to be a big help.
Yeah, definitely. I'll have a bus load coming up to support me, as always. Thanks to them for coming, buying the tickets and supporting me, as they always have since I started this career. I'm going to be moving up to 8 rounds. So I'll be an 8-rounder to qualify me for the Irish title. And hopefully I'll fight for the Irish title soon after, maybe summertime. The plan is.
Yeah. What adjustments do you have to make then when you're going up in the rounds? As you say, you're going to 8 rounds in this fight. I mean, like, what adjustments do you have to make in your camp then? Is it more conditioning? Is it more sparring rounds? How does it work?
Yeah, it's just more sparring rounds mainly is the only change, really, because you're training, you're getting fit. In a matter of 6-4, you need to be fit anyway. So all that's really changing is the amount of rounds sparring you're doing. So this camp I've stepped up, I've been sparring 8 rounds regularly, whereas last two camps I was sparring 6 and 4 rounds regularly. So just when you can do it in the gym, you'll do it on the night.
Exactly, yeah. Now, is it 3-0 you are now as a pro, Cahill, is it?
Yeah, 3-0 at the moment. 4-0, 16.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just never doubt my mind that's going to happen. But how do you feel like you've improved, I suppose, in stepping up from the amateurs to where you are now as a professional?
Yeah, at the start, it was a bit of a hard transition. Joe. The amateurs is more of point scoring, like fast, tap, touchy, whereas the pros is more about causing damage and sitting down your punches and hurting a fella. So, at the start, it was a bit tricky, but I think I'm after getting the hang of it and I'm after transitioning really well. Right now, I've none of the amateur habits. I'm out of all the amateur habits that I used to have, and I'm fighting like a pro fighter.
Yeah, you've won 2 of your fights by stoppage, the last of which was in Parochial Hall. I was there for that. Alexander Nogolaski, you put him down twice as well, which I suppose shows you that the power, I suppose, that you have in your hands.
Yeah, definitely. Even at that, I was forced to take Mulder because I got a cut from the clash of heads. So as soon as I got the cut, I just said, I'm finishing him now. And I dropped him twice soon after and stopped him then.
And you were in the corner for that spike as well. What was your impressions of his performance that night?
Very impressive. Showed a lot of character in that fight. A lot of guys would have straight away. It was a pretty bad cut. A bit down the gum shield and showed his metal, and it was absolutely fantastic, really. It was a real test very early in his career, and I'm sure with shining colours and very impressive.
And Spike, there's been a couple of boxing nights now in the Parochial Hall, and it's great to see boxing back in Cork and Cork fighters coming to the fore. Is like fighting back in Cork something that's on your agenda in the next 12 months, say?
I don't know. I'm just going to look at this one. Just, you know, see how this one goes for me. Even though, regardless of the result for this fight, I've been out for almost 2 years, and it's been quite a short camp. So, win, lose, or draw on this fight, I'd be looking toward the next fight anyway, to be honest. I feel as though I can continue to sharpen up after this fight, really. But I'd love to fight Cork again. Yeah, and I think professional Cork boxing has never been stronger. In my knowledge, anyway, there's quite a few good fighters, really good fighters now. There's Callum Walsh, Stephen Cairns, and Carl. You know, so I think it could be reason for a very strong card in Cork in the near future. I'd like to card on that, of course.
Not to forget Tommy Hyde as well, who has a big fight next week as well, doesn't he?
All right, Tommy Hyde, really good as well. I see him spar with Carl as well. There's some great spars there. Cork boxing is really, really strong. Stronger than ever, I think, you know.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic.
They want to spare me, you know, next.
When you say that this has been a short camp spike, does that mean you took this fight on, like, short notice?
Well, in terms of my previous camps, yeah, I guess so. I've been in camp here for 4 weeks, you know, so my fight comes, I suppose, be 6 weeks. Not too bad. I kept myself in shape anyway, but boxing-wise, it's... you know, it's been topping up to sharpen up, you know. But I feel as though I'm improving week by week, and I'm going to use this fight and hopefully get back in camp again soon after and continue to sharpen the tools.
Patrick's there with
the ring girls are here, actually. You may hear them in the background.
That's all right, yeah. Patrick's day of fight for you, Spike, in Castlebar. Who were you fighting? Do you know much about him?
There's been a couple of opponents, actually. Becky's been saying, like, there's been really good fighters offered to fight, and quite surprised. I thought they might have jumped at the opportunity, because given they've been out of the ring for as long as they have been and getting a bit older, I thought that they'd seem reluctant to take the fight. I think fourth or fifth guy, I think, is taking the fight now. I'm actually genuinely a bit confused at this stage as to who's actually who I'm actually fighting now. I'm kind of, I just told Pascal, I'll fight for whoever, like, it's no problem, like, whatever, bring him in, you know.
Yeah, so it's Pascal. So you've got faith anyway, you'll have an opponent on the 17th.
I hope so. I'm pretty sure I will. He says I will, so I hope he's right.
Carl, you could be fighting twice in two nights here, buddy.
He probably will be. He's coming to the after party in Mayo.
Paul, how are you fighting on the 16th?
I'm actually, I don't know his name, but he's Slovakian. He's living in Belfast. He's Slovakian. He's could be a bit of a step up then from my other two opponents that I hadn't broke law last year. So I watched clips of him and I'll get him out of there.
He's actually Vladimir Belushkin's cousin.
Yeah. But you obviously feel like you're ready for that step up, Kyle, and to start climbing the ladder and start getting up there.
Yeah, definitely. 2 seconds, I'm going on. I'm almost left. Yeah, definitely. I feel I'm ready for the step up. I've been sparring 8 rounds comfortably this camp, and I'm getting in really, really good shape. Like, I'm after my body fat's the lowest it's ever been. I'm actually getting ripped up now for once. About time, it's been 10 years boxing and I'm getting ripped up now. So yeah, I think I'm ready for this to step up.
Yeah, fantastic stuff indeed. Spike, will you be in the corner for him on the night, or will you just be just looking after yourself the night before your fight?
Maybe looking after myself for my fight, because it'll be my first time making weight in 22 months, and just over an hour drive to a cause fight in Galway. So that would make over 2 hour driving for myself. Plus, if you go to these box events, you know, you'd be kind of, you know, people, like, no problem usually, like, talking to people, get pictures or whatever. But, you know, the night before the fight, it wouldn't be ideal preparation, and a bit tired and drained from making weight, of course. So I'll just be concentrating on rehydration and resting up and just getting as much energy back as I can.
Yeah, those boxing events can be draining, all right, because they're long events anyway, like, you know, when. And you'd be talking to everyone and everyone as well. And that does take it out of you, I suppose.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it certainly does. Boys, not going to wish you luck, because, like, neither of you need it. But I'm really looking forward to what is a massive week for Cork. Looking forward to 4 Cork wins over the next week or so. But lads, an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thanks very much indeed. And I'm looking forward to seeing you perform.
You are very welcome back to the Big Red Bench. It is Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you until 7 o'clock. Now, I promised earlier that we would have post-match reaction from the Cork Hurlers win against Offaly, so let's get into that now. We'll hear from Cork boss Pat Ryan first, and then from Cork's Alan Connolly, who was man of the match and scored 3 goals and a point, and they both spoke to Off the Ball's Ashton O'Reilly after the game.
Pat Ryan, you must be pretty happy with that scoreline today.
I look delighted with the performance overall, but look, obviously, I think Offaly were missing a couple of players, and look, obviously we had a good side out and were able to bring on a couple of really good finishers as well, like that got scores for us at the end. But look, delighted with our lads, their attitude, their professionalism of it, and look, we move on to Wexford in 6 days' time now, and that'll give us another opportunity to see where we're at.
Yeah, 5-28 in the end, and a variety of scorers as well. I'm sure that's pretty pleasing for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Look, and I think we got plenty of scores from all over the pitch, you know, from the half-back line and from midfield as well. So look, from our point of view, that's hugely positive. I think the bench was a huge issue, or huge change for us today. Yeah. I thought, look, we got plenty of scope off that, and that's where we need to get going forward. But look, delighted with the performance of ourselves, and we move on to Wexford in 6 days' time and then preparing for Championship on the 21st of April.
Yeah, what do you take from a game like today? Obviously some brilliant scores and that out there, but for you, what do you take from it?
Oh, look, we're looking for attitude, like, and what fellas are going, because look, in fairness, look, Offaly have made great strides all year in the league and stuff like that. They've put in some very good performances, and we knew today was going to be a tough game, but from our point of view, look, they brought a good bit of physicality early and a bit of movement off and an awful less track today. I thought we were, some of the things that we wanted to do we did very well. Some of the things we wanted to do that we didn't do is disappointing. There are areas they'll give us work on, but look, it's another day that we think we got a bit better, and look, obviously we're in the gym tomorrow night and training on Wednesday. We'll try and get better those two nights and really drive into Wexford on next Saturday.
Yeah, there was a number of changes as well, so it obviously gave you a chance to see other players.
Yeah, exactly. Look, we'd have a couple of fellas that were making their first league starts, or Dara's first time getting actually a bit of game time as well, and other lads like that. So it's look, we were delighted with the state of our squad, the healthiness of it. We've one or two lads that'll be back over the next 2 weeks as well. So look, all goes well for a championship, but look, it's now is the time where you need to be improving and settling down your first 15 and getting your squad really into position where you want it and getting that ladder. So where fellas are at. So look delighted where we are.
Yeah, there was serious movement up in the forward line to create those chances, and Alan Connolly as well getting the hat-trick.
Yeah, look, looks great for Alan. Look, be back, look, his first game, he's had a tower of time with injury between his shoulder and then obviously his hamstring. The hamstring's probably been at him for 24 months, that kind of way. Look, got brilliant care from his physio in Blackrock while he was away from us. Sinead did a fantastic job with it, and then Colin Moreau, physio here, and doctors have done a fantastic job as well in making sure that he's right in the strength and conditioning fillers, and that he's not reoccurring in that, like, so. But look, we know the talent that Alan has, but look, he's just one of a number of fellas that we think we've talent wise, do you know what I mean? Like, so look, that we've a lot of fellas that are home, so it's really competitive, and that's where we want it.
And there was a good crowd of Cork people here. It's quite a spin for them, so it's good to see.
Yeah, look, in fairness, look, I think, look, in fairness, in Cork, look, they're just looking for something to support, and that's our job, to give them something to cheer, something to come after. Look, obviously, we haven't been as successful as we'd like to be in the last couple of years, and look, there's a real hunger within within the county board, but within the players and the management team as well, that we want to be successful. So that brings a bit of pressure, but it doesn't. It's a great pressure, because that's where we want to be.
Alan Connolly, you must be pretty happy with your performance out there today, and 5.28 in total for Cork. That is some scoring.
Yeah, I suppose we were kind of disappointed the first half. Like, we left a lot behind us, but yeah, the lads that finished out the second half there were really clinical, like, so yeah, very happy.
And yourself, 3-1 in the end, so you got the hat trick?
Yeah, like, it was the lads that hit the ball in, like, cliche, but it's true.
Yeah, but you took them well, especially the last one as well. It was a tricky angle.
Look, it's just a bit of luck, really, like, so yeah, don't know.
And are those games the most enjoyable when you're scoring that much? And I suppose there's a variety of scorers as well, so a lot of lads are getting on the ball.
Ideally you want everyone on the score sheet or whatever, like, but realistically it's about getting the win. Like, today was about getting the win and having a good performance and building on next week against Wexford, so yeah, we're delighted with the win.
Yeah, two wins now in a row, so how important is momentum?
Yeah, that's what we need, that's kind of what we're after. Like, look, we beat Waterford there 2 weeks ago, beat Offaly today, and hopefully we'll go on and beat Wexford now and then build for the Munster Championship 6 weeks' time.
Is that what it's all about, just looking to the Championship? I suppose there's lads today getting a chance out there, so they're putting their hand up for places.
Yeah, like, the competition's unreal at the moment, like, training's really good, it's a good bite, and I suppose, yeah, just building for the Munster Championship. Like, if there's a league semi, there's a league semi there, but we're not really too worried about anything there.
How would you describe the team at the minute? There's obviously some young lads coming through too.
Yeah, like, there was a lot of injuries there a few last month, and there still is, like, so there's loads of lads coming back, which is making more and more of a positive impact on the camp, like, so yeah, delighted.
Yeah, I was speaking to Pat there, your manager, and he was saying it was hard, you know, at the start with Fitzgibbon and that on, when a number of players are away, you're not getting a chance to see them. He said today, you know, there was a chance for that.
Yeah, it's great to see Fitzy back, like, and you know, like, I came back 2 weeks ago, and we'll see Robbie come back as well, Robbie O'Flynn. So yeah, more lads come back, the more positive it is, so more training, better training.
Now, it was, of course, International Women's Day on Friday, and I had the pleasure of chatting with racing driver Clara Anderson on Friday morning. She's currently driving for the Sun Mini Meal team in Extreme E, and if you've ever wondered what it would look like to take an electric SUV off the road and put it in a remote desert location to race on a completely bespoke track, that is what Extreme E does, hence the word extreme. It offers something completely different from your usual racing series, and Clara was able to tell me all about her experiences with Extreme E so far. So Clara, I always ask this question as my first question when I speak to anybody from a racing background. I always want to know, what's your first ever motorsport memory?
Ooh, that was a while ago. I think it must have been, I got my first go-kart when I was seven, so 2007. And I can remember just briefly, we were on this small little go-kart track. Me and my sister, we shared a go-kart. And we were there with my mom and dad. And we were just going around. And what I can remember for the first time was that I had a little crash, let's say.
Okay.
And my mom was so worried, and this was like the smallest of go-karts, and she was asking like, oh, what did you do? And I was like, I wanted to try if it was flat, the corner. So that's, I think, is one of my like first memories of my actual go-kart and my racing memories. So it's quite fun. I haven't changed so much.
I was just going to say, that's amazing that at 7 years old, you are already like, how fast can this go?
Yeah, I love that. I've always loved the feeling of speed.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those that aren't aware, you're now obviously in Extreme E. For those who are not as familiar, you know, with the sport, how would you describe Extreme E? Because it's quite different from other racing series.
Yes, it is. So Extreme E is a global off-road fully electric racing series. This year is my second full season. So we are racing in the big electric SUVs, the same cars for everyone. And we're going to different remote corners of the world, you can say. So we create the tracks for the series. So it's always a new track, always new conditions. We race on sand, gravel, stones, etc. And each of the teams also consider of one male and one female driver that we drive together. So each of us do, for example, one or two laps, then we have a switch and the teammate does one or two laps as well. So it's a world's first to have this type of racing format, but I love Extreme E. I've been involved since, I would say, 2021 when I did my first rookie test with them. And it's so cool to see the development of the series.
Yeah, absolutely. And new teams also coming in all the time. So you're with Sun Mini Meal this year. First year for the team racing in Extreme E. What has the preparation been like to set the team up to get going for your first season?
Yes, it has been quite busy. We just finalized our season last year in the beginning of December. So the break was not so so big from when we did the first race this year in Saudi Arabia a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. So Timo Scheidel, my teammate, he has been super busy. He's actually the team principal of the team as well, with the team's owner, Wolfgang Graber, the CEO of Sun AG and Sun Mini Mill. So they have been super busy just setting the team up and just getting everyone on the same page, preparing everything with the car. It has been super hectic, but we're so happy to start this new chapter together and hopefully create some good success.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd be curious to know, what is a normal week, like let's say a race week, look like for you? Because as you mentioned, the locations of the races are, you know, they really are quite remote. And I suppose also because you're racing on these bespoke tracks that are on different types of surface, as you said, it's not like other series where you can like get in the sim and you can, you know, like simulate all these different things that help you practice. So what does the prep look like for you?
Yeah, exactly. You're totally right. It's all the time the track is new. You have no idea. And we're actually only allowed to see the track and do the track walk on Thursday on the race week.
Wow.
So you don't really look at any onboards or so on. So what I do is I try to, for example, now pre the Saudi race, we knew that the condition was going to be sand. So I tried to look at all the onboards that we have from sand races, rewatch all the old races from then when they were racing on that condition, and just try to take away some tips and tricks on that condition. But otherwise, it's quite hard to prepare specifically for Extreme E. And I would say a normal week, we travel to the race location maybe on Monday, depending on where it is. If it's Europe, it's quite easy. But for example, now Saudi Arabia, we're going to the US in the end of the year. So it's quite long travels. But then It's fully prep day on Tuesday. Then we do the legacy projects, which I really love, where we highlight the challenge that is currently in that remote corner of the world that we are racing in. And first day track walk, free practice on Friday, and then it's time to go racing on Saturday and Sunday. So quite busy, but it's so cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And you had a couple of podiums last year. I know it was kind of, it was a challenging year, let's say. But what are your goals for 2024 now with this new team as well? It's obviously a really exciting kind of fresh slate almost for you.
Yeah, it is very exciting. As you said, last year was quite, kind of tricky. We were quite unlucky with a few different things, but we also showed some really good pace throughout the year. So I was really happy with that type of performance, but for sure, it's really exciting to also now be a part of the Sun Mini Mill team. And we are a new team, but both Timo and I, we have been racing in series for some time, and we have high goals as a team. Now, unfortunately, we had some tech issues in the first weekend of the series, but we are super committed to come back strong, and we want to fight for the podiums and eventually the wins as well. So the motivation is really high, but for sure, we also need some time to prepare everything in the team.
Absolutely, that makes total sense. And there's been a number of times in your career already where you've had, you know, first female driver achievements, and Extreme, as you mentioned earlier, has a fantastic level of gender representation just by default as well. Do you feel like that representation is important to show to young girls who are maybe interested in motorsport, but they don't necessarily see people like them in a lot of the other series?
100%. I can't stress that enough. It's when I grew up, I had the luck and the privilege to have both mom and my older sister racing as well. Yeah. So for me, I've always had them as my role models. Mm. But when I look outside of that, it hasn't been a lot at all. Like, of course, we have, for example, Michel Mouton that everyone knows about, who is a legend in the sport. But what I love now is that we see so many more females and women drivers around the world in different series doing incredible things. And Extreme E is for sure one of the championships that has really taken a big step for women in motorsport. And just giving the platform for us drivers to be in the same car, in the same team as some of the best drivers in the world. I mean, Sebastian Loeb was my childhood hero growing up. We have Kristoffersson that are racing the world championship with. And yeah, it's just unbelievable. And it's so cool to see the development of everyone. And I do think that as a, especially young girl and young boys as well, you have to see it to be it. You have to have some sort of role model or representation. And I think it's really cool.
Yeah, for sure. And to mention as well, like the Swedish national team, I think it's awesome that, you know, it's such a, it's kind of like Ireland, right? It's such a small country, but like their level of representation of women in motorsport there is fantastic. What do you think, where do you think that comes from? Because it's really impressive.
Yeah, it's a good privilege to have. We're so lucky to have so many women in Sweden performing so well in motorsport. I don't really know why. I mean, Sweden is highly involved in, for example, rallycross. We have a lot of rallycross. The Swedish championship level is super high. We have a lot of participants there, and the Sweden national team works so hard with the inclusion and the diversity and really helping young drivers. They have helped me so much in my young years, and I think that's incredible. And I love to see how it keeps evolving, that this is still just the beginning, and it's really inspiring.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's awesome. And it's great to know that it's happening at the grassroots. As you said, they're really working on helping younger drivers to develop, which is amazing. I think a lot of what you mentioned about Extreme E and your love for speed from a really young age kind of points to a couple of your skills that make you really adaptable as a driver, which obviously for Extreme E you have to be. But what would you say are maybe your top one or two skills that you personally rely on the most when you show up at a track? And as you said, you just have to kind of figure it out as you, when, you know, when you get there.
Ooh, that's a good question. I think as a driver, you need to have everything, but you always have your strength and your challenges or weaknesses. But I would say that my my biggest strength might be my racecraft, that I would say is one of my strengths, but also that I'm extremely analytical and I love data. I love to try and prepare as much as I can. I mean, math was my favorite subject in school, so I love
amazing
sitting with the engineer and just learning as much as possible and just to never stop. Like, no matter if you're the fastest or not, you never stop, because the development and the evolvement never stops. So I love to try and just be as perfect as I can when I step into the car, because then especially in extreme, it's so extreme that you need to be prepared for everything. So it's really good to try and do the homework as much as you can.
I bet the team love that, because I know, like, even from speaking to other drivers, it's such a, it doesn't get spoken about a whole lot, I think, but I know how much the engineers and even the mechanics, depending on what series you're, you know, what cars you're racing, they just really appreciate when the driver actually takes an interest in everybody's job. And, you know, it's, I think it must create a really positive atmosphere within the team as well. Do you find that within the new team now?
Absolutely. It's especially in Extreme, the teams, we are so small. We're approximately 10 people in each team. So everyone is working so closely in our little tent with the car. And everyone, I mean, me and Timo are driving the car, but every component of the team is so important. It's if you don't have the right engineer or the right mechanic or the right team manager, etc., you can't win the championship. So I think it's really important to highlight that. Yeah, we are individual drivers, but this is a team sport. And it was a great atmosphere in Saudi now with the new team. And I can't wait to see them again and have a good race weekend again.
Yeah, speaking of which, what would you say is your like number one dream track that you haven't had an opportunity to compete on yet?
Ooh. Would you say Extreme E-wise or any other series?
Well, I guess the Extreme E one is tough because you don't know exactly what it's going to be like. So we'll go for non-Extreme E.
Oh, then I must say Loac, the Rallycross track in France. I've been there as a spectator when my sister was driving, and it looks really fun. And the French fans are so passionate about the sport. So that's a dream to race there one day.
Awesome. Love that. And I know from your Instagram that you love the gym. You are always in the gym. Fair play to you. You put in so much dedication. What's your favorite and least favorite exercise in the gym?
Oh, that's good questions. It's that's quite hard. I used to work as a personal trainer before I went professional. So I love the gym and I love to work out. But I think as a driver, you need to stay fit and you need to stay athletic and you need to be quite all-rounded, especially for the different type of racing that I do. So I think my favorite exercise might be just pull-ups, for example, because it's nice to feel strong and it's a great exercise for pretty much the whole body, I would say.
Yeah.
And then least favorite, well, no one loves burpees. do them. No one loves
them. Oh my gosh. They're the worst. My personal trainer loves to make everyone do burpees, so I feel your pain.
that is like, it's a great exercise, but I don't like them.
No, it's so tough. It's so tough. And then my last question was, what is your number one song that's on your workout playlist right now?
I've listened to it for a couple of years, but I love the Blue Monday by New Order. I love the old school vibe. I also love like 50 Cent and some hip hop and stuff like that. So that's always a good vibe when you're at the gym.
For sure. I think it like that kind of music, it just pumps you up. You're just like, okay, I can do it. I feel strong.
Yes.
Love it. Look, Clara, thank you so much for taking the time. It's been a pleasure chatting to you and wishing you and the team the very, very best in 2024.
Thank you very much.
That is everything I've got time for this evening, folks. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. It has been Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you for the Sunday edition of The Big Red Bench. I didn't have time to chat F1 during today's show, but you can catch my race debrief chat with Sam Cooper from the McLaren Pondering Papaya podcast. Say that three times fast, which is available wherever you get your podcasts. But in the meantime, have a great rest of your evening and stay tuned for Green on Red up next.